You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty, continuing now with our series of conversations about teens and suicide. Jeff Edwards is on a mission to go into as many schools in Michigan as possible, talking to as many kids as possible about mental health, depression, and suicide. Let's find out why and what his message is. Jeff Edwards, welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
I would like to start out a little differently by having us get an idea of what your presentation is like and the kind of thing you're saying to youngsters when you go into schools.
I talk to them about scotomas, and scotomas are an ophthalmological term. It talks about an area of diminished vision within the visual field. But the layman's term is it's a blind spot. It's when you look at something and you don't see it. And so I sort of suggest to them that my hope is to perform sort of a virtual LASIK surgery on them to open their eyes up to things, to maybe help them to see things that they're not currently seeing, some things that are right in front of their face that they can't see. So I use a few examples of scotomas. Some of the classic ones are you looking at an image of an old woman? Are you looking at an image of a young woman? Do you see the head of a rabbit or do you see the head of a goose? So I try to get across the point that a lot of times we're looking at something right in front of us and we can't see it. And look at how revelational it is when somebody points it out to you. It's like, oh my goodness, there it is. I've saw it the whole time. Why didn't I see it? And the idea that sometimes we're looking at a problem that doesn't look like it has any solution to it, that we don't have the ability to solve, and we start feeling bad about ourselves when we don't have the ability to be able to solve this problem. But that what we miss is that very often we're not equipped to solve the problem on our own because we are human beings with inherent limitations. We're not, you know, some, you know, supreme being that has all the answers to all the questions before they're even posed. We're all lacking in information. So sometimes rather than trying to solve a problem ourselves, what we need to realize is that the ability to solve a problem is in recognizing that we can't solve it and that you need to find somebody who does know how to solve the problem, an expert in that area. And so you don't always have to do it on your own. You can unburden yourself in doing that. And you're not a bad person if you can't solve that problem on your own. I then show them some images of a boy, and I ask them what they're looking at when they see that. And they have all kinds of answers. He's, you know, seems happy, smiling, he's active, he's doing the things that he's doing. But then I ask them, well, what are you looking at when you look at him that you can't see? What I reveal is what they can't see is that he's dead and that he was a victim of suicide. I then ask them to look at me and ask them what they see. Mm. And I qualify by saying, hey, I realize I could stand to be in better shape and lose some weight and my hair's, you know, not as dark and thick as it used to be and I didn't wear glasses. But then I ask them, what don't you notice? What don't you see? What they don't see is that I'm a father with a broken heart, that I have a Chase-sized hole inside of me. You know, what they don't see is how I react when I drive by a Chase Bank sign or when I receive email or voicemail messages that say, you have a very important message from Chase because I have a Chase credit card. Or, you know, what they don't see is how badly I would love to be able to just buy a pair of tickets to anything to take him to. You know, because I'm never, ever going to get that opportunity.
Chase was 12.
Yes.
And that was in 2003 when he died by suicide.
Yes.
So he was in middle school, right?
Yes.
Do I understand he was not, you know, certainly from what the kids are telling you as they look at pictures of Chase, this is not the type of kid that one has kind of as an image of someone struggling with depression and mental
illness? No, he was just the opposite. You know, he was active and well-liked and popular. And, I mean, we're partial, but handsome. He was artistic. He was funny. He was compassionate. He always had, you know, the comments that came back, he always had your back. He was always the champion of the underdog. He was the type of kid that, you know, the mainstreamed handicapped kids would invite to their birthday parties. You know, I mean, he was just a loving, sweet boy. And he was so antithetical to what it was that you would have anticipated at the time.
The assumptions. Those assumptions.
Right, just the stereotypes, you know, the moody, you know, the picked on, the bullied kid. I mean, just all the stereotypes that come to mind. It's those stereotypes that deceive people into believing what they're looking at is something other than what it could potentially be.
After it happened, you know, retrospect, did anything come together where you had that terrible hindsight and went, ah, or any clues, anything?
Initially, no. What does a 12-year-old have to be so depressed about that they resort to taking their own life? You know, that's, you think maybe teenagers, forlorn love, you know, Romeo and Juliet syndrome. What is a 12-year-old? You know, so we didn't know that much about it. And we had actually had conversations with him about someone who had taken their life months before and how, you know, things are never so bad to have to do something like that. So the more we investigated it, the more we came to realize that unlike learning about the birds and the bees or alcohol or drugs or any of those kinds of health-related issues, that when it came to really important life-threatening kinds of things like mental illness, youth depression, pre-suicidal behavior, that no one was equipped to know about it. And that just didn't make sense to us. As we learned later on what those warning signs were, you know, tragically, we saw that Chase had every single one of them.
Such as?
Well, things like oversleeping or having disruptions in his sleep patterns. It's an inability to sleep. You know, he would come in the evening. It'd be, you know, 9 o'clock, 9:30 on a school night. We would say, well, what are you doing up? It's like, well, I can't sleep, Dad. Well, it's a school night. You need to go back to bed. Well, I can't sleep. Well, you know, maybe eating chocolate or drinking caffeinated cola later in the day can
keep you up. Typical
parent
answer. Yeah.
You know, and then after Chase died, some of the email messages that we would receive would say things like, Chase, I used to think it was so funny the way you would sleep on the bus on the way to school. Now, how does a parent know their kid's sleeping on the bus? Does the bus driver see that? No, the other kids on the bus see it. But if they don't know what they're looking at, then it just looks like funny kids sleeping on the bus. Chase used to go to a rollerblading skate park near our house, and he'd say, Dad, watch, I'm going to go down this big ramp, I'm going to do a 720, and I'm going to land it going down another ramp. He never could do it. He would always crash and burn. And what would we say to him? Chase, what are you, nuts? You're going to kill yourself doing something like that. Reckless, self-destructive, risk-taking behavior. Mm-hmm. I mean, these things that very closely mimic normalcy if we don't know what it is that we're looking at, right?
Again, just as you talk about that image of the old woman and the young woman in the same thing, you have to look with different eyes.
Right.
And I know that you worked very closely with former State Representative Chris Ward to draft and pass the Chase Edwards Law. And this law encourages public school districts and academies to provide what's called age-appropriate instruction for students and also training for teachers about the warning signs and the risk factors. In your experience, is this something schools want to do?
My personal experience is no. It's something that they are reluctant to talk about, because they still subscribe to a lot of the antiquated misinformation and myths that exist out there. Like, if you talk about it, you're going to put ideas in kids' heads, and they're going to go out and do it. Quite frankly, there was the chairman of the State Senate Education Committee. That was their primary concern that they expressed to me when the law came to that side of the House. But I was able to get my hands on some research, compliments of Dr. Cheryl King from University of Michigan, that substantiates the fact that you don't make kids go out and take their own life by talking about it any more than you give them cancer by talking about it. And once we provided him with that information, it streamlined right through the legislative process and was voted on in unanimity. There was not one dissenting vote. Everybody, it was a no-brainer that they voted on it and for it, as did the governor in signing it. But the kicker was, is that in Michigan, we cannot mandate curriculum. You can't tell schools what to teach. It's up to them. And so the Michigan Department of Education provides model curriculum outlines so that school systems don't have to reinvent the wheel. But those school systems don't have to employ it 100%. They can cherry pick it.
Well, they even says in the law, I've got it here, failure of a school district or any public school academy to comply does not create a cause of action or constitute a breach of any legal duty. So they're just saying, if you want to do it, it's a gentle suggestion.
Right.
This is the kind of law, I've got to wonder, that makes a legislator feel good. Look, we've tackled this.
Oh, yeah. We've got this wonderful framed photo of us with the governor and a copy of the law with Chase's name highlighted on it and the pen framed as well that she used to sign it. But we didn't delude ourselves. You know, in many ways, this is a symbolic law. It's not a substantive law. It's a law without teeth. It's like having to do your taxes, but there being no April 15th. You know, are you ever going to get them done? There's nothing that holds people to any standard or a level of accountability for teaching about this.
And do you envision any way of bolstering Chase's law to be able to put more teeth to it?
Well, where the bolstering would be, and this is what we're working toward currently, would be like, you know, exists for subjects like bullying, that teachers and counseling staffs, as part of their professional development and ongoing training and education, that there be requirements that they, within a reasonable amount of time, should go through some training to familiarize them with the warning signs so that if it's quacking and waddling and swimming and laying eggs and flying south once a year, they recognize it for what it is.
So you can mandate teacher training. Can't mandate curriculum.
That's one of the approaches. And, you know, there's a lot of states that already have this in place. So we're not looking for Michigan to reinvent the wheel here. And so, unfortunately, too many schools wait for a tragedy to happen before they wake up to the fact that they have a problem with mental illness and suicide. But once it happens, then they're frightened that there's going to be contagion, that kids are just going to start dropping like dominoes from this stuff. So they want to let it settle down and quiet because we, quote unquote, don't typically have this kind of thing happen in this area. When I field some of these calls, it's like I want to reach through the phone and grab these people by the lapel and go, what are you talking about? It just did. Mm-hmm. So then they wait. But then they leave all of these grieving kids struggling, trying to figure out why this person did it on their own without more proactively controlling the dialogue and providing them with the right kinds of information to begin with.
Which is what you're trying to do as you go into to talk to schools, because the first line of defense starts with the kids sitting next to that youngster in the school bus or in the classroom.
Because they're going to talk to each other way before they're going to talk to adults about it. And so what I encourage these kids to do is to start their own social epidemic of making it okay to talk about. You know, we're not asking them to find a cure for cancer or to lower the crime rate in their area. What we're asking them to do is just make it okay if they're feeling bad to talk about, because this is not a flaw in character that we've far too long made it out to be. It's more a flaw in chemistry. This is not a mood. This is a malady. This is a medical condition. If they were broken, bleeding, feverish, or swollen, their parents would have them into the doctor yesterday for this stuff. So why is this any different? You know, contrary to popular opinion, there are 350 million plus Americans that don't just get sick from their neck down. You can get sick from your neck up. So that's what we're trying to make them aware of.
Has this helped you heal?
It has. We often say that when people are about to die that they have a life review, like their entire life passes before them. But I can tell you that when you are a parent that has lost a child to suicide, every wrong thing you ever said or did plays back to you. I mean, it's unbelievable the minutia that comes to mind of the things you shouldn't have said or how you handled things or mishandled things. And it's very, very tough to find the road to forgiveness, self-forgiveness, when it comes to those kinds of things. Because as a parent, you're supposed to protect your kid. To have allowed something to happen in your own home is unconscionable. But what we've come to realize is that all of these kids are our kids. And the comparative that I use is, how do we typically, or how does a school typically handle an attempted abduction outside of a school? A lot of people find out about it, right? Yeah. They send notes home, local law enforcement, parents, teachers.
Yeah.
Within 24 hours, it's on all the local media. It's on their websites. They have composite drawings of the perpetrator and photographs of the type of vehicle he drove. The reason people take it seriously is because, God forbid, it could happen again, or it could happen to my kid. When the cold, hard reality is, there's a far, far greater probability that someone's kid is going to suffer mental illness, one in four kids by the time they're 18 will, that they're going to have dark thoughts, with a great percentage of schools having kids who have already attempted. Nearly 2% of a school's population, both middle and high school, have kids who have already attempted. Not going to attempt. They already have. So there's a far greater probability that someone's kid could fall victim to this than ever is the prospect of them being abducted. But yet it would be akin to a school who had an attempted abduction saying to the community, you know, we're really not going to talk about this because we don't want to upset anybody, and God forbid, we don't want any kids going out and getting abducted. So let's just keep our fingers crossed that this doesn't happen again. And if they handle an attempted abduction that way, there'd be some answering to do. I, on the other hand, I'm someone who have seen this perpetrator. I know his MO. I know the vehicle he shows up in. I know his disguises. And all I'm trying to do is to let you know what this villain looks like and acts like and what insidious methods he employs. Why wouldn't people want to know that, right? Then the school systems that, in my view, are doing it properly, they have me come in every semester. I'll come in 3 times a year and talk to every single middle school health student. Or I will come in to every 9th grade health class or theology class and talk to all of those kids. And so they know every person has been exposed to this. And, you know, it isn't foolproof. There are still kids who have heard me speak that years later have, you know, resorted to ending their own life tragically. But I do have enough instances where people have provided me feedback to say, their kid realized that they weren't a bad person, that they were just sick and they needed to talk to a doctor, and now they are. And nothing could be more gratifying to me.
Well, certainly a mission that really does not have an end. And you can reach Jeff Edwards by emailing him, jeffhashope@gmail.com. Jeff Edwards, thank you so much for sharing your work and your story with us on Stateside.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.